I absolutely sympathize for anybody at home. You may be like me, you may love gardening, but just when you've had a hectic week and you're knackered, top of your priority list isn't always your garden. And if that's the case for you, the important thing is to make the garden work for you, because the garden is an extension of you as a person, and the garden really is just an outside room. So your garden is a fill-in to your home. So if you don't have the time to sit and maintain lots of pernickety things, then that's where you do grow some lovely shrubs or trees or low maintenance areas or things that you can put in and leave to themselves, or take a bit of time to put a load of mulch on, and then you've far less work to do later on.
Welcome to the Scotland Grows Show, the podcast where we celebrate Scottish gardening. I'm MT O'Donnell, editor and producer of Scotland Grows magazine, and your host for this adventure. We are delighted that this series of the Scotland Grows Show is sponsored by Roots, a subscription from National Trust for Scotland, which celebrates Scotland's flora in the form of a Roots pack sent to you every 6 weeks, containing Scottish seeds to grow at home, tips from expert National Trust gardeners, and stories and histories of the Scottish plants protected and cared for by the National Trust, thus helping both your garden and National Trust for Scotland's gardens thrive. Scott Smith is becoming a well-kent face on our screens as head gardener at Beechgrove Garden and a new presenter for Beechgrove in 2023. Scott came to Beechgrove after head gardener positions in Pitmedden Garden and Haddo House for the National Trust for Scotland. So what does it take to make a TV gardening programme? With Beechgrove in its 45th broadcasting year, Scott and his team are always busy behind the scenes, and I'm looking forward to getting the secrets behind the screen from the man left in charge once the cameras are gone. Scott, welcome to the Scotland Grow Shows. I am absolutely delighted to have you on the show today as a guest.
Thank you very much for having me, MT.
As we said in the intro at the top, you're becoming a very well-kent face now across Scotland because of your appearance this year on Beechgrove. But you didn't just appear from nowhere on Beechgrove. Tell us a wee bit about your gardening career then before this year.
I actually did, funnily enough. Do you remember Terminator 1, where he just appears like butt naked in the car park out of space? I just did that in Beechgrove, yeah.
They just picked you up, yeah.
Yeah, I just appeared out of nowhere. No, so the shortened version really is that I left school, I went to university and did cybersecurity. So I did a course at Abertay called Ethical Hacking and Countermeasures. So very, very different from what I'm doing now.
Yeah.
And it just wasn't for me. I went to uni, didn't know what to do, picked the thing I thought sounded cool. And yeah, I didn't enjoy it whatsoever. It was all day indoors, dark rooms, fat, sweaty guys on computers with ponytails. And I thought, this isn't my scene whatsoever. So
I'm despairing here now because my son is off to Dundee Uni next week to do computing science.
Oh, well, there you go. Never know. He might be sat in 10 years speaking to you about how he's an excellent gardener now.
We might make a gardener of him yet. That fills me with inspiration.
Yeah, I dropped out of the course because I hated it and knew that's not what I was going to do with my life. And basically, I got lucky because I left and I just took the very first job I could get my hands on at the job centre, which happened to be a seasonal gardener for the National Trust for Scotland at Kelly Castle. The interview went horribly, and I did not expect to hear anything back, but it turned out I was the only person to show up for interview. And there you go, I got the job, and I fell in love with gardening from there, and everything just snowballed. So I went from a seasonal there, and then got an apprenticeship, and then went on to be a full-time gardener, and then worked on a private estate, and then Haddo and Pitmedden, and now Beechgrove. So just feels like one of those meant to be sort of things.
Yeah, absolutely. And you've had a couple of dream jobs. So head gardener at Pitmedden and then straight on to Beechgrove. So how did you enjoy your time working for the National Trust for Scotland? Because it's obviously a massive organisation in Scotland, championing our conservation and our heritage.
Yeah, so like I say, the first job I got was with the National Trust. So that was at Kelly Castle in Fife, which was a wee arts and crafts garden, very romantic and a lot of fruit and vegetable growing. It was organic, so I loved it there. I really fell in love with gardening. A lot of it was to do with the head gardener, Mark Armour, who I will still say to this day is my horticultural hero, because he just made it so interesting and so fun and just really made me see that gardening could be a career path and isn't just a job for people that aren't academic or whatever. He made me realize there's so much to horticulture. I don't think anybody who works in it will know everything in their lifetime. There's so many different routes that it can take you down. So I always thank Mark for giving me my start, and he really helped push me into getting an apprenticeship up at Pitmedden as well. So yeah, I did seasonal work at Kelly Castle, then I went to Pitmedden and Crathers Castle to do an apprenticeship, and then I left the trust for a few years. And when I came back in, it was to be head gardener of Pitmedden Garden and Haddo, so I was running both at the same time, which was very intense. I did that for 4 years, and you're running a roster of around 40 people, permanent staff, seasonal staff, volunteers, having to liaise with property managers, events people, running different sets of budgets, different gardens, different criteria. So yeah, it was very hard work, but it was rewarding. When you look around and you have people coming up and saying how lovely the garden looks, and I feel there's always that gardener's curse where all you can do is go around and look at things that are wrong and not really enjoy the garden. And sometimes you just have to take your gardener's hat off and imagine you're a visitor and walk around and go, yeah, this is lovely.
Yeah, literally take time to smell the roses.
Exactly.
So during your time with National Trust for Scotland, you must have seen a lot of the gardens under their care. Do you have any favourite National Trust gardens to visit?
I feel, again, a personal one for me, it's always Kelly Castle, and that's just because it's just so nostalgic for me. It takes me back. There's just something about that place where you open the big door into the walled garden, and then there's just this beautiful enveloping arts and crafts garden with the castle just poking up at the back. It felt like Hogwarts to me. It felt like Harry Potter. It was just magical. You just went in and you were just completely lost in this sea of colors and smells and chickens running about, and there's all this art deco kind of furniture and sundials and herbaceous borders mixed with perfect little vegetable plots. And yeah, for me it's still my favorite, because I go in, I've got lots of happy memories there. It feels like the place I started, and I feel like over the years I've revisited it, and every time I come back I know more about horticulture, and the more I know, the more I can appreciate how wonderful a garden it really is. It's a bit like when you start in gardening, you don't really know much at all. And it's funny how if you walk down the same street you've walked down for years, and suddenly when you learn about things, you can go, oh, that's a Cotone aster, and that's this, and that's that, and that's the next thing. And it almost feels like I once was blind and now I see. It feels like you've really just become aware of what's there in front of you that you've been blind to for years.
And how nice to have that real affinity for Kelly Castle when, as you say, that was what launched your career.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Launched you all the way then into Beechgrove Gardens now. So, is that a dream job now, being head gardener at Beechgrove?
Yeah, absolutely. It is a dream come true, something I never thought I would do. I watched Beechgrove for years. I was always a fan of it and enjoyed what they did. And I liked their sort of down-to-earth approach, and things were more technical and they weren't afraid to admit when they had failings. There wasn't the kind of gardener's world dreamy perfection. It was a bit more like, here we are, northeast of Scotland. I've grown me broad beans and they're knackered this year because of chocolate spot. I like that. I like that approachability. So again, I'd never intended on being head gardener at Beechgrove or a presenter or anything like that. It just happened to all come around. I was at Pitmedden and Haddo. Like I say, I'd done 4 years, and just the chance to come to Beechgrove opened up because Mary, the last head gardener, had actually decided that she wants to retrain as a nurse. So it's something she'd always wanted to do. She went for it, she got it, and it was her time to move on. And there was the chance there to be head gardener at Beechgrove. And I thought, hell yeah, I'm going for that. Yeah. So I applied, got my interview. It seemed to go really well, and I ended up seeing off candidates from, I was told there was people from New Zealand and Abu Dhabi and
Wow.
Singapore. So, very, very pleased even to have got the job, seeing off quite some strong candidates. I think there was about nine people interviewed in total. So delighted. And yeah, it's been absolutely brilliant. I really, really enjoy it there.
And did you realize when you went for the head gardener position that you would also be a presenter, or did you think you would just have the garden to manage?
Well, I did a section not long before in September. They came and filmed at Pitmedden Garden because Chris Beardshaw did the big £100,000 restoration project of the upper garden, which was sort of, he designed it and I did it. I think you spoke to Chris Wardle not long ago. So he was the design landscape manager, and basically he facilitated the idea and got the money and picked Chris Beardshaw. And then after that, Chris Beardshaw designed it and just basically went, here's the plan, Scott, on you go. So that was me. I had to project manage the whole thing. And it went very, very well, I think. We came in on time, under budget. Everything was grand, I believe. And they came and filmed it for Beech Grove. So that almost felt like my little pre-interview interview. I came and I had a chance to be on for 5 minutes and did a bit of presenting, displaying the garden to the public. And of course, I was used to doing it with tours. We had tours around the garden all the time. So I didn't intend to be a presenter or anything like that. They just said in the interview, if we need to use you on camera, would you be comfortable? And I said, yeah, don't mind at all if you need me. It wasn't my intention, but it ended up they gave me a few chances at the start of the year. They introduced me as the new head gardener, and then they would say, well, we've got a week gap. Do you fancy doing a 2 minute piece? And I'll say, yeah. And then that 2 minute piece became a 4 minute piece, became, do you want to do the back to basic strands? And then that became, do you want to present a full episode? And there you go. It's just all again snowballed. And I really enjoy it. I like both sides of the job, really.
Good, that's great, because you literally have become a bit of a stalwart on our screens now. People genuinely enjoy your sections. I think as a viewer, you explain horticultural terms in a very understandable way to the non-professional.
Well, that's part of when I was a head gardener, I had apprentices. So that was my job all the time, was to go around with people who maybe didn't know anything about horticulture or maybe knew a bit but didn't know how it worked. So I had to find a way to sort of relay the information and what we're doing in a relatable way and make it, bite-sized and digestible. We had to go around and say, this is what we're doing. This is why we're doing it. This is why we're doing it now. This is how you do it. Have a practice. And I think that was probably quite good for Beech Grove as it stands, because it's very much the same thing, but rather than me talking to a person, it's just talking to a camera lens and saying, we're a way to prune this rambling rose. Looks scary, but it's not. Here's how we do it. We do it step by step. I'll show you. And I did that all the time in my old job. So
So you just treat the camera like your apprentice. That's an easy way to look at it.
yeah, maybe the cameraman wouldn't like me treating him like an
Apprentice
apprentice. Yeah,
gardener, not an apprentice cameraman. So let's get into some of the background of Beech Grove there. So you're there day to day with your team, maintaining and developing the garden. Is it really annoying then when the other presenters turn up and film their bit like they've actually done all the hard work?
that's a brilliant question, actually. Yeah, because
Bear in
I
mind, we've already had Brian and George and Kirsty on the podcast, but
always.
you can tell
Yeah, Kirsty's the worst, honestly. No, she's fine.
all.
Well, it's hard to describe. So, I mean, I imagine some people maybe have this fantasy of thinking the presenters are there all day, every day, working away on the garden, but they're not. They are presenters and they really know their stuff. But if that was the case, they wouldn't have a gardening team. So I kind of see it as my job is to facilitate the showing of things on camera. Beech Grove is a television program. The garden really is like a green studio. The garden is there so that we can show people things. And what I do is I liaise with the presenters, and a lot of them have big plans and big ideas. So Carol is quite prolific. Carol will come out with these huge lists of, I'd like to grow this, that, and the other. I'd like to do this. I'd like to do that. I'd like to do X, Y, Z. And I will sit down and facilitate it basically. So I'll come in fully aware that this is Carol, this is what she wants to do, and I'll make sure that it gets done so that it's all ready to be shown and filmed. Because, at the end of the day, ultimately, we are making a television program. And I wouldn't say annoying is the word, not by any means. I actually feel that we get credited quite a lot more than I expected. Quite often, they'll be talking about a piece and they'll say, Scott, the head gardener, has done XYZ, or the team have done this or done that. So we are credited more than I expected to be. And, and at the end of the day, it kind of feels like it's my job. And if they didn't have a big list of stuff they wanted to film, then I wouldn't have a job. So I can't say it's annoying, really. No, not at all.
So, any other background secrets from Beech Grove Garden that you would like to reveal to our listeners, Scott?
Yeah, I'm actually 4 foot 3. The camera
Yeah.
makes me much bigger. background secrets. I would love to show people outtakes because the outtakes are hilarious. There's an amount of times that we'll get a good way through a scene. You'll be talking away, talking about, I've sown this seed, and the reason that I've sown it like this is because of XYZ, and then you'll suddenly go like, ah, quite a lot of swearing, I would say.
Or maybe that's
So
an idea for a Christmas special of all the Beech Grove bloopers.
Beech Grove bloopers. Yeah, that would be quite good. Quite good.
Maybe the highest rating episode ever.
Yeah, people like to see the real life stuff.
Absolutely.
Secrets, I would say, I don't know if it's a secret, but what took me a little while to get my head into was because I was used to gardening at these very public gardens, these very high profile ones like Pitmedden, is that I had to have everything looking good all the time. And that was it. People would walk around, they would see everything, there was no hiding. Whereas Beech Grove, because of the nature of it, we're not open to the public. And as such, it's a very big garden, it's about 4 acres, and it's mostly myself and a couple of gardeners, which do a few days, not too much. So my job really is to look at the planner to see what we're going to film in the next coming weeks and to facilitate that. So I have to look at what's going to get done, who's doing it, where, make sure I've got all the materials, make sure I've got it all set up, and make sure that everything is ready for those scenes. So that is my job. I basically go around maintaining the garden to the best of my ability all round. But so long as we make sure those bits which are getting filmed look particularly great, then that's that. And it's quite an interesting way of working. It's not some way that I've ever worked before. Before, I always had high pressure for everything to always look perfect. Whereas it's quite refreshing to sort of be able to look and think, right, I'll get these bits looking cracking, and then I'll worry about these other bits afterwards, if you know what I mean. And it's funny how, like, just now we're in hedge cutting season, hedges need cut, and that's it. And you're cutting hedges thinking, but I'm not filming at this bit. No one's even going to see this. And I'm spending all this time cutting a hedge. And you think, well, hang on, actually, I'm a gardener. This is my job anyway. It's funny how you start to suddenly think, will people see this bit? Do I, how much time do I spend on this? Or do I just make sure that the bit we're filming looks really, really good? Or so it does feel a bit like you have to prioritize key areas over other bits, and the rest of it is as and when you can get to it. But the more you push, the harder you push to get everything looking good, then the less work you've got to do next time around. So if you're lazy and just let things get really weedy and tall and sloppy, then you've got a really big job next time to get that bit prepped for filming. So it's a fine balance, I would say.
It's just a different way of working, as you say. And Beech Grove is obviously just about to stop filming for the season. So does that now fill you with excitement that actually you'll get the garden to yourself for a couple of months?
I mean, it would be different because I've now had, from the end of March until about the end of September, we film every Tuesday. So a Tuesday, you come in, it's a full day's worth of filming. We start off at 8:30, we finish up about 6:30 at night. It's a long day, so it just feels like a big cycle at the moment. Monday is getting everything ready for Tuesday filming, Tuesday is filming. Wednesday is a bit of a tidy up and sort out. Then the rest of Wednesday slash Thursday, I get on with the garden and the general, making sure the grass is cut, making sure that nothing's looking too weedy, if there's any particular pruning to do or veg stuff, I'll get on with all that. And then Fridays, again, we have a group of volunteers who are lovely folk. They come in and give us a hand sometimes to just see what's needing doing. Again, sort of looking into the next week, getting the rough crux of the work sorted, and then on the Mondays, just the finesse and the final touches. And that's it. It's felt like that since the end of March until now. It's just same thing every week. We're just looking at the planner, looking at what's happening, getting everything set up and organized, and the main bits of gardening gets done in between those times. So it's a little bit easier at the moment because, the start of the year, obviously, we've got hundreds of seedlings and, well, thousands of seedlings to water and prick out and pot on and look after and harden off and plant out. And, I kind of have a, like I say, a presenter's list. I've got Carol, her list, George, his list. Then I'll have Kirsty, I'll have Callum, I'll have Lizzie, I'll have Diana. And then, of course, some stuff for myself as well. So you're trying to make sure that everybody's little bits are ticked off. And some of those things can be time sensitive as well. So somebody wants to grow sweet peas, you're not going to be filming it until episode 23, but you've still got to start it in February. So you're having to look down the list for the entire year and make sure that everything's on time and on schedule for what's being filmed.
I think most listeners will now think, oh my goodness, thank goodness I have a regular size garden and I just get to go get on with regular jobs.
Yeah, I guess this is the difference between doing it for a living and just for yourself, yeah.
Yeah. So what is your own garden like then, Scott? It's not a 4 acre site, I'm assuming, or am I wrong?
No, my garden's half an acre, and tell you what, I wouldn't want it any bigger than that. That's just fine for me. I moved at the end of, oh, 2 years ago now. I moved 2 years ago, and I now live out near a little village called Udney Green, which is lovely. It's countryside, no neighbors, peace and quiet. It's ideal, what we've always wanted. For 10 years, I never had my own garden. I had a little postage stamp at a seaside village called Colliston, so very hard gardening conditions and never really had much of a garden. So when we were able to move and we came here, it's felt lovely having our own garden. Like I say, it's quite an interesting garden. I've got a little strip along the front, which is north facing, and it's right next to a field, so it gets absolutely wind blasted. So we've got really tough stuff in there. We've got hollies, geraniums, we've got cypresses, we've got quite a lot of bulbs because they're able to come up and give the color and then go away again without dying, and azaleas and things like that. And then round the back, the garden is actually a triangle shape, which is an unusual one. And we are in the midst of redeveloping. When you move in, you first think, right, I want to change X, Y, and Z. But we've given it a bit of time to show us what it's got going on itself before we go ripping anything out. And the back's much more sheltered, so we do have things growing like acers and some more tender things that are quite lovely. But I would say my garden is very wildlife friendly, which I love. It's not super neat. It's not Pitmedden where it's got perfect straight edges and perfect straight hedges. Because it's a triangle and it's a field on all sides, we've got a lot of shrubs. So we've got hawthorn and we've got really wild clematis that scrambles up and over the wall and ivies. And, I don't have every scrap tidy and every leaf picked up. There's all sorts of fauna going on in my garden, which I like, actually. I love to see. I've got four raised beds, which are made out of old tatty crates. So I got tatty crates off the farmer and cut them in half and filled them up. So that's what I use to grow my veggies and things like that. And there's a little den that my son, he's six, so he loves it. There's like an old willow den, which, we've folded over and weaved, and that's his little hidey den that he goes in and things like that. So it's very much a family garden where you go to just escape, and it's just a safe place and lots of wildlife. And yeah, it pops a color, but it's by no means perfect. There's weeds, there's a bit of mess, but I love it.
And is it hard to find time then to want to garden in your own gardening space after spending all day in Beechgrove Gardens? Because it's a bit of a juggle then time-wise for you.
Oh, absolutely. It's very much like the chef who goes home and makes beans on toast for his tea. I find that, I love, and I mean, I absolutely love horticulture and gardening. I just live it and breathe it. But when you've been working your butt off all week at Beech Grove and making sure that looks prim and proper and perfect and as good as you can get it, when you come to Saturday and you've got to get up and take him to his swimming lessons and go for the weekly shop and tidy the house, and then you're knackered already and you think, ugh, I could do with getting out in the garden. It takes a bit of doing. Yeah, I absolutely sympathize for anybody at home. You may be like me, you may love gardening, but just when you've had a hectic week and you're knackered, top of your priority list isn't always your garden. And if that's the case for you, the important thing is to make the garden work for you, because the garden is an extension of you as a person, and the garden really is just an outside room. So your garden is a fill-in to your home. So if you don't have the time to sit and maintain lots of pernickety things, then that's where you do grow some lovely shrubs or trees or low maintenance areas or things that you can put in and leave to themselves, or take a bit of time to put a load of mulch on, and then you've far less work to do later on. I would always say garden to what suits your lifestyle, because you might have a fantasy of how you want something to look, but if it doesn't work in practicality, then it's no use to you.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. So I have asked every guest on the podcast so far if they could only have three plants in their garden, what would they be and why? Because it is very interesting, obviously, for listeners to be able to compare that. So not necessarily your favorite three plants, because which gardener in the world could pick their favorite three plants? But if you were starting again now with a garden and you were only allowed to have three plants in the garden, what would you choose and why would you choose them, Scott?
It's interesting. My first one is purely sentimental. So my first one would be caraway, which is, Carum carvi. And it's a herb, it's an unusual herb, it's a bit aniseedy and things like that. But the main reason isn't because I particularly like it. The main reason is it's because it's the plant that brought me and my wife together. So I was an apprentice at Pitmedden, and I happened to be helping out working at a musical tribute night. I think it was Michael Bublé or something very uncool like that. And my wife used to work in the tea room, and she came to just see some of her pals. And she'd heard that I was the new gardener there. So she came over with this plant that she didn't know, and it happened to be caraway. And she said, "Do you know what this is?" I identified it as caraway. And then that got us talking. And then, here we are. 12 years later, married to her with my son. So the little.
Lovely story based on a plant encounter.
Yes, exactly. It's the plant that got us talking, and there you go. So that's always a special one for me. And when we got married, every table we had themed with a plant. So the top table was caraway. And the little menu thing, we did botanical drawings of each plant and that kind of thing. So.
You really are horticulture like through and through, aren't we? If we cut you in half, it would be running out of your blood.
That's it, yeah. The other one I really like, in our garden, we've got Prunus cereulata, the Kanzan, so the Japanese cherry. And I love that because I just think it has so much bang for your buck. We've got, gorgeous pink blossom, just that blossom that you just can't even describe, that gorgeous, gorgeous color from May, June, sometimes even hangs on into early July. And then you get the summer greenery, but then when we get into autumn, then it starts to turn into that, that really fiery orange and red foliage. And then in winter, you've just got the gorgeous bark. So you've got texture. It's something all year round. And I always wanted a cherry tree, and my wife always wanted a cherry tree. And when we happened to move here, they already had a cherry tree, and it was a Kanzan. And I thought, there you go, that's meant to be. So that would be another pick for me. Final plant, again, just because it happened to be here when I moved in, but I hadn't seen it before, was a kind of lilac. So it's a Syringa pubescens, and it was a Patula Miss Kim. So we got it here, and it wasn't until June, I think, because we'd moved in, the house was quite old and needing some renovating. So we did a load of work, and we had good friends of ours come in and help. So, we redid the kitchen, redid the bathroom. And I think it was the very first day that the bathroom was ready and I got to use the new bath and I was super excited for it. So I opened the window, had a bath, and I thought there's just this absolutely gorgeous smell. And at first I thought maybe it was the bubble bath, but I looked at it and I couldn't get it and I thought no. So I went outside and there it was just outside the bathroom windows, this lilac, this Syringa pubescens. And the smell was just absolutely incredible. And again, this year when it came out, it was so good that I had, quite a lot of people coming over to the house asking, can I get some cuttings? So I ended up doing cuttings for them and passing it on. And I thought I would definitely, no matter what garden, I think I would pass that on to any garden because it could be suitable for any garden really if you've got the conditions for it. And the smell is probably one of the strongest and most beautiful scents I've had on any flower or plant that I've came across in my years. So
Well, that's really
hopefully.
interesting because people generally pick plants because of how they look, not how they smell. Smell is sometimes an afterthought, isn't it? And oh, it comes with a smell, that's lovely. But you particularly pick that plant on smell.
Yeah, so I've gone for a sentimental one for looks, one for smell.
So if that were your dream garden and you only had those three plants, well, you've kind of ticked all the boxes, haven't you? It'd be quite a nice garden to sit in.
Yeah, hopefully. I mean, I'd probably go hungry because there's not much edible apart from caraway.
Things to look at and things to smell. So, to finish, Scott, I want to ask you if you could offer some advice then to gardeners who are listening. So, what would be the kind of best pieces of gardening advice you would give to new gardeners or to people who just haven't started yet? A bit like what you said earlier, they look at their garden, they think, I don't have time, I don't have knowledge, I want to get out and do this. What's the best kind of pieces of advice you would offer to people to just get out there and get started?
Well, I think that for me, just doing it, because I was not ever really the kind of person who learned particularly well from books. I can do it, but for me, I don't know something until I've done it myself. You could read about pruning all day, but until you go out there and try pruning, you're not going to know. For me, it almost becomes like a muscle memory thing. And again, a book will show you one scenario, but in real life, you come across lots of different scenarios. And it's not until you practice that you get comfortable. So I would say for anyone, if you're really keen and you want to learn more, then it's worth going to these little workshops where you could be guided through things by a professional or volunteering at one of your local gardens because they really appreciate having help and you'll be able to learn from people because I think a lot of knowledge comes from people themselves. Everything I've learned, not everything I've learned, but a lot of what I've learned has came from someone showing me first and by having someone take the time and show you, it gives you the confidence to try it and then do it yourself. And your garden at home, I think, is the ultimate place to be brave because, my garden at home was the first place I tried topiary and I thought, well, if this goes really, really badly, then nobody's going to see it except for me. So, don't be afraid. Go out there, play, experiment, try. I've learned far more from my mistakes than I have from my successes. And a lot of time, making mistakes is just being brave enough to give it a go. Unless you try, you won't ever know. So the first time I ever grew tomatoes, I put them on a windowsill and they were horribly long and exfoliated about 5 feet tall. And I was thinking, oh yeah, look at these amazing tomatoes I'm growing. I'm gonna be like, this will be like record breaking stuff. And then I was like, hang on, why is this all dying now? And then you look it up and go, ah, okay, lack of light. Okay, that's not what it should look like. Never mind, right? I'll try again next year. You know what I mean? It doesn't matter where you are or who you are. You could be George on Beech Grove. You'll still make mistakes all the time. We all make mistakes. So just don't be afraid to try things. Don't be afraid to make mistakes. Don't be afraid to go out there and speak to other people or just get as much exposure as you can to other people who are involved in horticulture. I just, yeah, just lose yourself. Just get enveloped in the world of gardening. It doesn't matter, read books, watch, Beech Grove or listen to this podcast, or it doesn't matter. Just get out there, try. And I think once you pick up the bug, you just can't get rid of it. Once you've got the gardening bug, it just never leaves.
Yeah, I love that. Just get kind of subsumed with
gardening knowledge and you find it becomes second nature. And I loved when you were talking about making gardening mistakes. So I'll give you a confession as well. The first time I grew carrots, they turned out, you know, they were growing and the tops were growing lovely. And it's all that you can't see what's going underneath the soil. So I was very reassured when I could see the greenery. These are going to be great. And I pulled them out for our local horti show and they were minute. They were about 2 centimeters high. But the chair of our local gardening show encouraged me to put them into the show in the novice category because it was the first time I'd grown them. And they actually won first prize because the judges thought they were like these special micro carrots that are grown for, you know, top chefs who want these like tiny micro carrots. But the reason they were so small was because, absolute classic beginner's mistake, years and years and years ago, I grew them in tubs and forgot to bore holes in the bottom of the tubs.
Oh, yeah. Yeah,
So
see that.
basically, for the entire season, when I'd been watering them, the carrots were just swimming. So they were never going to grow in this swimming pool pot. But it was the biggest learning experience ever in the garden because I've never made that mistake since. And now I can grow absolutely fantastic carrots.
There you go. See?
Yeah, so we all learn from mistakes. And that's the great thing about gardening, isn't it? Every day's a school day.
Is absolutely every day is a school day. I still learn new stuff now all the time. And you just constantly learn, you constantly grow, don't you?
Well, Scott, thank you so very much for giving up some of your time to chat to us on the Scotland Grow Show. I wish you very well with the rest of the off-camera season at Beechgrove. And as this season draws to an end, we will very much look forward to seeing you back on our screens next year.
Yeah, thank you very much. I'll be on episode 25, so a couple of weeks' time, you'll see me present the second last show with Diana Yates. And then there's only one more after that, and that's the end of this run of Beechgrove already. So.
And that's when Scottish gardeners get very sad because Beechgrove finishes and we don't have anything then until next year till it all kicks off again.
You always leave them wanting more, that's the trick.
That's it. Scott, thank you very much and best wishes for the rest of the year then.
Yeah, thank you very much for having me, MT. It was a pleasure.
Thank you so much for tuning in to another episode of the Scotland Grows Show. Don't forget to follow us on social media by searching for Scotland Grows across Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, or LinkedIn. And sign up for our mailing list so you never miss an episode of the Scotland Grows Show. And if you are not yet subscribed to receive Scotland Grows magazine, 6 times a year, straight to your inbox, literally packed with Scottish gardening goodness, then be sure to do so as soon as possible, and you'll even get access to all the back issues. Details can be found on our website at scotlandgrowsmagazine.com, across our social media feeds, and in the show notes for each episode. The information on the National Trust for Scotland's Roots subscription is also in the show notes, and they would appreciate your support to help National Trust for Scotland's gardens and designed landscapes thrive. I look forward to you joining me on the next episode of the Scotland Grows Show as we celebrate Scottish gardening.